You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by the Brand Driven Digital Event Series, featuring Digital Strategy Bootcamp. This day-long, intensive, and interactive workshop helps you ground your digital marketing with a solid strategy that you can share with your team. Learn more and register now at branddrivenbootcamp.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Each month, as part of the On Brand podcast, we'll take a look back on the month that was. We'll reflect on the brand builders we chatted with here on the podcast and also discuss the latest news, trends, tips, and pop culture funnery that was part of our brand zeitgeist. To help with this, I'm joined by our special contributor, Megan Foster. She works in the digital trenches with our clients and helps us plan our event series, including the industry-leading Social Brand Forum. Megan, thanks for joining us. What's been in the brand zeitgeist for January 2015?
Well, actually, our home state has been in the brand zeitgeist. You know, we've been...
Iowa,
those of you
listening from all over the world.
Yes. And, you know, first, obviously, The Bachelor is from Iowa, Prince Farming.
Hashtag Prince Farming.
Hashtag Prince Farming. And fun fact, I went to high school with... two of his sisters. And so my family kind of grew up with and around that family. And so it's been very interesting for me to see my hometown all over ABC and People Magazine and whatnot.
So it's not, and it's in addition to Prince Farming, you have, we are coming to you a couple of days after the State of the Union with the majority response from Joni Ernst, new senator from Iowa there. And also, of course, the premiere of the new season of Girls, which has somewhat contestuously, at least in our local spheres, involved... the subplot that takes the protagonist, Hannah, to the Iowa Writers' Workshop. And I say contentious because there's been much discussing, and ultimately they did not film on campus, and I certainly have an opinion about. So with all these Iowa things, I mean, I think as, you know, from our very first episode of On Brand I guess it would be our fourth episode in, so our first one with Patrick Hanlon and our fourth one Andrew Davis, or fifth one with Andrew Davis. You know, really, we talked about the role that a sense of place plays in your brand, and I'm fascinated by Andrew's new book that he's working on, Town Inc. But I think that goes the other way, too, that all of these things going on also inform the brand, too. And I think that we as Iowans kind of... take the girls thing, and it's not just girls, because I think the first episode taking place in girls, you get the obligatory cut to the fields of corn and some kind of old tractor sitting very picturesque in the field. And it's like, yes, that might look like parts of Iowa, but specifically in talking about the Writers' Workshop here in our community, it's a little bit of a different animal, so...
Well, you know, not only that, and again, I haven't seen many of the episodes of The Bachelor. I don't watch The Bachelor.
Confession.
I don't even. But I do know that a lot of people, like from Arlington, and who didn't weren't Bachelor fans, you know, obviously tuned in to see how our town would be portrayed. And, you know, I with the whole girls controversy and also with Joni Ernst and her response, which...
Hashtag bread bags.
Yes, exactly.
Hashtag Prince Farming. Hashtag bread bags. I can't say probably what would be the most, because we're not iTunes explicit. I couldn't say what might be the more popular hashtag from the season opener of girls, but those, of course, being the prominent ones out there.
Right, and so it's very interesting. You know, when you talk about how girls used the establishing shot of the cornfield and the tractor, I know that one of the promos for The Bachelor had Chris Soules walking through a cornfield with the Field of Dreams sort of callback. And, you know, the branding of Iowa, you know, is interesting to me.
It's to be clear, it's not just girls, because, you know, people talk about it whenever we're the big game on ESPN or one of the major news networks. That's the, you know, corn, hogs, that's the stuff. And I think it makes some of us cringe at our own brand identification.
Yes.
But if you think back to what Patrick Hanlon talked about, in the absence of a clearly articulated brand with your own icons and some of those things, I don't want to say zeitgeist with that being what we're talking about, but everyone, society as a whole, will plug in what they think your icons should be. And it's like we kind of are on both sides of the argument, because we're grumpy about what is shown, and that's where I'd bring it back to kind of what I have trouble when I shake a fist at why they wouldn't let them film girls on campus. Because I think here's a chance to show, you know, if you talk to people that kind of know a little bit about Iowa, what's something else you know about Iowa beyond, you know, corn farming? Not that there's anything wrong with any of that, but you do start to hear the writer's workshop. Well, what's an icon that goes with that? What does that look like? And wouldn't it, you know, regardless of how the storyline's going to go, and I'm sure, unless they plan on relocating the whole show to Iowa, I'm sure at some point something's going to go awry and she'll end up back in New York. So, but regardless of where that goes, I do think it's an opportunity to say, here are some of our icons. Here is what the Pentacrest looks like. Here instead of, where did I see? It was somewhere in New York that they had filmed.
I think it's on Long Island.
Yeah.
Somewhere on Long Island. And it is, now one of the writers for girls is a graduate from the writer's workshop. And so they have, I appreciated that they slipped in little references to the yacht club and the rager on Lynn Street, which...
North Lynn Street.
Yeah, I think I have been to those before myself, a rager or two. The Bat, now that is a very specific Iowa City
old house thing. You had a bat.
I did. We had a bat in our fireplace. And we had a couple of experiences similar to what they showed. I loved the black and gold title card.
To be clear, I kind of picked on them for the corn thing that they controlled,
yes.
But, and I would say that that's a bigger problem if we don't have enough icons or a clearly articulated brand for people, whether it's ESPN or girls, to show anything else. But with what you're talking about, the details that they did sprinkle in, were nice, but, I would say, if we want to do kind of a woe is us Iowa, and our brand reputation is hurt by all of these stereotypes. Stereotypes exist when there's nothing more clear put out there. So I would actually do a wag of the finger at Iowa and working to...
Well, and it's tricky too, because, you know, in talking about Joni Ernst, looking back on her campaign, and she won, I believe, because she took advantage of a lot of those stereotypes, her campaign narrative. And now, to add to the Iowa brand zeitgeist, we have Joni Ernst to thank for the making them squeal, and now it's hog castration. When she was sworn into the Senate, Lindsey Graham presented her with a huge plaque that had a castration tool on it.
Now, to be technical, did someone else point out that that was actually the wrong size of a castration tool?
Yes, yes, it was. It
as long as we're talking about it here.
Or the wrong type. but she really capitalized on a lot of those Iowa stereotypes and wove them into her campaign narrative. I think one of the things that, you know, and I don't know, this may be me being overly wonky, which I am known to do, but I feel like she has some, I don't agree with her, obviously, politically, but I feel like she has some decent qualifications. You know, she was a state Iowa state senator. She's a lieutenant colonel in the Iowa National Guard. She has a master's of public administration. She served on some really high-ranking committees in the Iowa Senate. So, you know, to kind of circle back to what you were saying, did we need to put her on a hog lot and talk about making them squeal?
Well, I think the hog stuff and castration, which is the bullet point. That's the thing. That's all I'll say is maybe that got some attention, but now on national press, and that's not, I think sometimes we're like, oh, the national media. And it's like, it's not their fault that that's the first bullet point. That's what the story was that was provided.
Yes.
I mean, I think though, as we kind of weave in and out of various topics that have come up on this show over the course of the past month, it makes me think of the elements of Primal Code. That's a part of her creation story, as Patrick Hanlon would point out. But it also pivots back to what Dori Clark was talking about why personal brands are powerful and they work. And forget agreeing with her politically.
Right.
I think that what we can all agree on is that she has established a powerful personal brand. And I will say this, for who she ended up overtaking in the election.
He did not have the narrative that she had.
He's a nice looking, average looking guy. But other than that,
there wasn't no clarity.
Many pieces of the primal code filled in.
No, there absolutely was not. And actually, when I first saw that ad, her hog castration ad, I knew that he was in for
just,
it.
Just every now and then I hear that said, and whether it's us here, national media, we're talking about that
now. But that's her sacred word. Those are her...
Oh my God, you're right. Way to make that
squeal.
Really relevant.
Make them squeal. Those are her sacred words. You know, and now, now we have this bread sack thing.
Bread bags.
The bread bag. You know what? I did that too.
I'm also loving all of the really relevant Iowans that I'm seeing, like our friend Andrew on Facebook, who wrote easily a 2 or 3 paragraph explanation of not only did he do that, but why it does not work scientifically.
Well, here's the thing. when I was cringing, obviously, when she brought that up or started telling that story. But the other thing that popped into my mind was, now she sounds like she's doing it wrong. And this was a raging debate on Facebook, because the way we did the bread bag thing, you know, I grew up on a farm too. I castrated hogs. Oh. I have all kinds of colorful,
careful,
folksy.
That's gonna go with your
I know,
personal
maybe
brand
I could
now.
Run for Senate, you know. But the way we did it, and I saw somebody else bring this up on Facebook, was that we put the bread bags over our feet and then we would put our boots on. And these farm boots are designed for mucking around in waste.
That was very, very well said. Nice, polite society. Yes. They were mucking around in waste.
Waste, yes, and in mud. And so a lot of times you would put the bread bags over your feet, put your rubber boots on, you know, and if there was a hole in your boot, then you would have an added layer of protection. Some people talked about using the bread bags to for an added layer of warmth, which is what I think Andrew had took issue with. Yeah. But anyway, so but now, yes, bread bags. And the only other last point I'll make about the bread bags, which I think is this is one of my favorite pieces of this story, is that before she gave her address, there was a photo circulating on Twitter and across all social media of her shoes. And she was wearing a pair of camouflage pumps. And so I just find that kind of a delicious little bit of irony.
It's a little hole in your story there.
Yes.
I also want to, we'll link up to in the show notes here, there's a great t-shirt from a great Iowa company called Raygun that I believe is capitalizing on this that says, what you say bread shop, we say shoe store.
Yeah.
Awesome. So that's us. You know, I said wag of the finger, and we've been talking about personal brands. I think the other thing that's happened over the course of, we're going to dip into the end of December here since this is a new show and this is the first month, but Stephen Colbert's exit. And, of course, the cameo to end all cameos with everyone that he had on his last show. But rather than rehashing that, we've now got 8 to 9 months, I guess, if he's been off since December, of sort of like a cleansing the palate after a really intense brand experience, because we forget he had created a very consistent personal brand, but one of the very few cases I can think of where it's an interesting personal brand that was not, in fact, actually him.
Well, and I am very curious to see what happens with him, since he is so strongly identified with that character that he created that he never gave interviews out. He gave one interview out of character, and that was with Terry Gross on NPR. And that is the only time he ever was interviewed outside of character. Now, and then, if you recall, when he hosted the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and I don't think that was very long into the reign of his show. Oh. And his character had not been very well established, and it just went over like a lead balloon. But over time, obviously, people began to understand that he was in character. So how does he transition from that?
And our listeners can correct me, but I'm fairly certain this is something I forgot about. My sister reminded me. Even the way his name is said, I believe the way other members, including his sister that ran a few years ago, I believe the name is Colbert.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even the way his name's said, I mean, he's probably still going to be, I mean, that's just, I mean, that's, it's like Donnie Brasco or someone being deep undercover.
Yes.
For like years.
Yeah.
But, obviously, there's the one side of me that's like, I want Colbert now, and September seems like it's really far off, but I also think the time, I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of show logistics that they need to accomplish. But I think some of that distance might be a little bit good for all of us to kind of cleanse the palate. In the meantime, Larry Wilmore's show rolled out this week.
Yeah, yeah. And I really liked what I saw of that. And I think, it's a good way, a nice... I don't know if palate cleanser again is the right, but it's a nice transition. I'm happy to see that they've taken another Daily Show correspondent and given them that slot.
Well, big shoes to fill. Yeah, and I think the assumption would be, oh, just put anyone there and give them a show. And I think you have to have a thing. And he's developed a format. It's not Steven's format. But if you examine it, it's interesting because we talked a bit about creating content brands with Andrew Davis. And shows specifically, whether those are podcasts or shows like The Nightly Show, are interesting because there's lots of those little pieces of primal code from Patrick Hamlin that you put in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way he opens his show, Good Nightly, to you. And he's got his little panel segment that they do. And afterwards they come back and talk about keeping it 100, which I'm not hip enough to have heard this before, but I know it now. And that's like being truthful if you're on the 100.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go around and, you know, they have to answer a question. And if they kind of, the audience kind of with applause on whether or not they're keeping it 100. And if not, they're awarded weak tea. But all these little things, while they sound like show features, they're an important part of that brand. And
I would add to that Comedy Central's brand, you know, and it's an obvious, and that kind of circles back to what I was, the point I was trying to make before, you know, and you have The Daily Show, you have The Nightly Show. It's a nice little dovetail. And Comedy Central has really been, I don't know how to say this properly, but they're kind of a threat to these.
Growing as a network, because the more blocks they can put together, because I think it's like, okay, we play comedy movie. I mean, I've been watching Comedy Central since I was in college, and it, you know, we've got funny movies and old Saturday Night Lives,
but this late night thing,
is
interesting. And it's interesting that the networks recognized that in going after Colbert. It's not only, you know, are they, you know, funny satirical shows, but they're also smart. And it's this interesting, you know, blend of, you know, legitimate good reporting in some instances. And I think I read a statistic somewhere that a lot of people within a certain, I don't remember what the specific age demographic was, but that was a source, The Daily Show and Colbert were a legitimate source of news.
Yeah.
I think it was people in college. And, you know, you can lament that, oh, it's a comedy show, you know, they're not, you know, is it really news? I would argue that it is. I would argue that, you know, satire is, even though it's satirical, it's also extremely informative.
Well, here's the other thing on why that block is a threat. Because the other thing they could have done that might have been easy would have been Chris Hardwick's show, At Midnight, has been really successful. At Midnight to the East Coast. It's 11 for us. And for a few weeks, it was slid in there at the 11:30, 10:30 slot. But what's important is that by keeping that block there and filling that in with Wilmore, many of us, that the way the old model worked was you go wherever, you may be somewhere else, you may even be on cable, but at 10 o'clock, you go back for your 10 o'clock local news, and then you go to the Tonight Show, Late Show, wherever else you go, but you stay there, and you're basically on one of the big three for 90 minutes. And now, I said this on Facebook the other day, I'm parking it at Comedy Central for 90 minutes because I watch all three of those.
Exactly.
Daily Show, Nightly Show, At Midnight.
Yes.
And, you know, the other thing that's interesting is those aren't, they've also diversified that 90-minute block, because before it's like, okay, 30 minutes of questionably produced late local news, and then an hour of, you know, pretty mainstream entertainment. Whereas, I think back to what Andrew Davis was talking about with mashups, especially in terms of shows, him talking about doing kind of a Charles Kuralt thing with his show, Claim Your Fame, new episode came out now. Remember, he's monthly, so go grab that. But him doing more of a CBS Sunday morning thing with a marketing show, me trying to do more of a long-form interview on point type thing here. This would be our equivalent of the panel, the weekly panel that they do over there. But take those three different shows that they're filling 90 minutes with. You've got Daily Show, which is kind of their take on a traditional news show. You've got Nightly Show, which I think is interesting because it takes aspects of Bill Maher. But I also think like Meet the Press. I'll be a design dork. Look at the table. It's the Meet the Press long panel table because that's really the thrust, the focus of the show. And then At Midnight, which kind of takes elements of social media, stand-up comedy, in a game show format. So I don't, that's my wonkiness, media wonkiness, but it's not just that they're, I mean, I really think, not that there's anything wrong with frat boy comedy or what Comedy Central sort of became no more for, but I think back to your initial point, they are really a very sophisticated media platform.
Exactly.
That's doing some pretty impressive things.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the only thing right now that would potentially pull me away from that 90-minute block on Comedy Central would be Jimmy Fallon. But here's what's interesting about that. The stuff on Jimmy Fallon, I usually catch the next day online. I watch the highlights. I don't necessarily go and tune into Jimmy Fallon's, you know, show. I catch the clips, I catch the highlights the next day.
I mean, I think that's what all of these shows are doing better than they were before.
Right.
And it's been a pretty recent thing, is chunking out their content. And we talked about that with the State of the Union. But another, speaking of late night and NBC and social content, over the past year, Saturday Night Live has really gotten quite sophisticated. And they push out update, follow, go like Saturday Night Live on Facebook and watch the social that's happening around the show, starting Saturday, leading up to the show, during the show, and then Sunday. You can basically sit there and over the course of the day on Facebook, they're going to feed you all of these little chunks that you might have missed.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I want to make sure that we also have time for as we go through our brand zeitgeist this month, is that we have time to talk a little bit about poop.
Right. That was kind of tailing back to...
We woke everyone up with that.
Yeah. Last year, which means just last month in December. But
hey-o.
Yeah, right. But yeah, Poopery and their fun little Santa video of Santa dropping a deuce at somebody's house
with these adorable British children.
Right. And here's a funny thing. We were actually early adopters of Poopery because my mom gave us a bottle of it a couple
kind of
years ago.
Like a gag gift kind of thing. You're talking about early adopters in a really serious tone.
Yes.
And it's and with given the product, well, I guess infer what you will. It's, you know, maybe probably true.
Is, you know what? It works. It's good stuff. It really, truly is. But what?
They're
what
not
I,
a new company. They've been
they're
around.
Not.
I mean, that's, I think the other thing people might think is, oh, have you seen that from that new hilarious company? They've been around for a little while.
Well, and what's interesting is that I went and took a look at some of their other content. And what I find really fascinating about this is that they have a very difficult conversation as marketers. How do you talk about poop? Your product is about masking poop smell. How do you talk about that? And what they've done that I think is really smart, two things. They have embraced it wholeheartedly. They have come at it, you know, head on, no tap dancing around it. And the other thing that they have done.
Imagery.
Yeah. The other thing that they have done is that they have this fun little juxtaposition happening where the bottle is very, all the touch points are very fancy. the bottle has all of this beautiful Victorian looking artwork on it, and it has a little rhinestone bauble,
like a bauble
on it.
And to be clear, it's been around for a while, and that's not something that, oh, we have these fancy commercials now, let's dress up the product. The product looks the
exactly.
same.
Exactly. That has not changed. Their Instagram is very clever.
Are they at Poopery?
I believe they are at Poopery. Very clever mixture of showing pictures of kind of designer bathrooms or quirky designer bathrooms, showing funny. One of my favorite picture of theirs on Instagram is a picture of a note that somebody slid underneath the door, and it says, or underneath the bathroom door, and it says, "Stop pooping, I miss you." And a lot of really clever stuff like that. One of my other favorite things is that they have a photograph of a fancy tray that you can make to leave your potpourri by the toilet. It's a picture frame, a fancy picture frame, and they give you instructions on how to make a fancy tray for your poop spray and to leave in your bathroom. So, and they have all kinds of products. I'm like the Poopery spokesperson.
I was going to say, really. But I think beyond the poop that we've used to get your attention, because that's how we've capitalized on it. I think it raises a lot of really germane things, because it's the innovator's dilemma. I have this great product that happens to do this. How do you sell that? And I think they've obviously been at fits and starts. So I've never seen it have the kind of reach that it's had over the past couple of months. And you pointed out there was another viral video.
Right. And that was actually the first one. And
what was the overview of that one again?
It was called Girls Don't Poop.
Right.
And it is this young woman, you know, again, they're playing.
She's the same one at the end of the Santa one.
Yes. Yes. And they're playing off of this fancy high-end image, but they're using really crude terminology like creamy behemoth and, you know, and I'm trying to think like a toilet anaconda or something like that.
Yeah. It's good copy.
Yes.
I mean, so like if you went through the like bulleted list of like lessons you can learn.
Yes.
Owning your situation, especially, and even if and especially it's an awkward one, own it. That's where you are. That's where the pain is, so to speak. The use of humor, which I think is another, we've talked about this, need to get him on this podcast, but with Tim Washer before, people are so afraid of grabbing what they see as the third rail of corporate communication, afraid to be funny, and humor there. But beyond, probably a layer of the humor too, is the way that that's written.
Well, and you know, when I've gone and I did go and look at their website and I looked at some of their other products and the copy, you know, they have products. One's called Crapshoot.
Oh my God! What does that do?
It's just another flavor, another scent.
Oh.
Deja Poo.
Can we not call them flavors?
Yeah. Right. You know, and but they all have little bits of poetry, assigned to each product. Each product. So like the Party Pooper one is, you know, specifically for when you have to use the bathroom at a party. And the poem that goes with it is, "When the glasses clink, don't ruin the party with your stink." And so they are very clever copy, very clever, all of these touch points.
Well, I think the other thing is, without sounding like this is some sort of dark horse engine, to go back and listen to the Patrick Hanlon episode. But if you did miss that one, a lot of the things that we're talking about that have been in the zeitgeist are really, I mean, that's why he was my very strategic first guest. When I knew I wanted to do a show about branding, I've never heard what is this cloudy, murky. I think what he said, the quote I loved of his in that podcast was that branding discussions, it used to be like molding fog. And I've never heard anyone say it's this checklist of these things. And you don't have to have all of them, but most of the best brands do. And you go back, you talk about the lack of the Iowa brand outside of the corn, the effectiveness of the Stephen Colbert brand, the Larry Wilmore new brand. It's something like a Poo-Pourri, too. And you can go through and you can say, you've got the, you've got very clear icons. You know what the bottle looks like. You know that it's got that little bauble on it. It has sacred words, tons of them, and they're poetic. It's got a creation story in that it solves a problem that, hell, I think it's safe to say all of us have. You could go through the list, and that's why these things are successful. So, I mean, if you are new to the show and are kind of, going around, going back, cherry picking a few episodes, you'll want to find that episode called The Primal Code of Branding with Patrick Hanlon. It was one of the first ones when we switched our format, switched our brand here. Other things on the poop front?
That's all for poop news.
Yeah.
So that's all the poop news I have.
I was going to say, we don't know if this will be a continuing segment. You know, we're hitting all of the really classic topics.
I know.
Castration.
Yeah.
Poop.
God. Yeah.
Well, we try. You know, the other thing that had been in the zeitgeist that we talked about a little bit with Ashley Butler from Chobani. I don't remember if it was specifically the brand that made her smile, which is where we try to end our show with. We were talking a little bit about this before we sat down, and we were talking about that phrase about, what's a brand that's made you smile. And how I phrased it like that was really because of smiling can mean a lot of different things. I mean, there's one thing we're called on brand. I thought in terms of, you talk about Larry Wilmore's show, the different show features that you can have, that you can add on. And I thought, maybe on brand, who's off brand? And, I feel like there's so much online that's just about piling on every mistake that everyone makes.
Yeah.
So I really didn't want to design the feature that way. However, I want to leave the door open because theoretically, something that makes you smile could be someone that is also a smile and a head shake of someone doing it wrong as well. But I don't remember if this was what made Ashley smile. I remember we talked about it. But the surprise and delight of the Taylor Swift thing at the holidays. That was an eye roll. That was an eye roll and a head shake.
Look,
so maybe it's the other kind of smile. You're not the Democrat. Do you know how creepy it makes me feel to say, what's awesome?
No,
Swift stuff.
Right. I get it. I get it and I don't. maybe if Tori Amos had done that, I would be all over it. But I recognize very much.
They'd be very different gifts.
They'd be awesome gifts.
what would Swift Miss Amos Miss?
I don't know what we would call it. She wouldn't subscribe.
Amos?
No, she would point out that it's actually a lot of Christianity has borrowed from paganism, and I think that's what Tori Amos would probably point out.
Have a very Tori solstice?
Yeah, something. It'd be a solstice anyway. But yeah, I recognize that, I am not the target demographic there.
There was a lot of screaming with that.
I know there was. Yeah.
I talked about Chris Hardwick. That's a little bit more of my demographic. And on At Midnight, maybe we can embed that. As well, he did a funny take of in pajamas wrapping gifts.
That's funny.
With a cat, too. But yeah. I think beyond that, because I want to say that I'm not in the demographic, but Taylor would probably say haters gonna hate.
I'm not necessarily hating. I just am.
You got all three in.
Yeah.
I'm not hating.
I've heard the song. We've got kids that. Two of our kids are Taylor Swift fans, and they're 7 and 9, so I think they're, more of the demographic that she was trying to reach.
But, I think the bigger thing, the brand lesson here is the unexpected factor. I mean, I know that, the other surprise and delight is everywhere. And I think that's something that, if properly executed, can deliver great results. Now, the other side of that, Laura Syrek wrote a social spotlight on our blog, or a brand snapshot, rather, on the blog, that talked about Lord and Taylor. doing something similar with their Obsessed campaign. A little bit more, less surprise, but you were supposed to find something of theirs that you liked, tweet a photo of it, use the hashtag Obsessed, and then they'll say, check your mailbox. Mm. And they did that for a few, but then they didn't. They flipped it the wrong way because they took the surprise out. Hey, you purposefully tell us what you want, and then maybe you'll get it. And I think Laura's point was it sounded cool, but on the other side, she never got the shoes, the watch that she used for that, and wondered, okay, so how many others? After they already made the hay of we gave a few gifts, did they just send a couple? So
now, was that before or after Swiftmas?
Probably right around the same time. I think it was leading into the holiday.
Okay.
But yeah, again, you could say that they have some similar elements, but they definitely use that recipe very differently.
And I'm just going to point out that I just used the term Swiftmas in a serious, non-eye-rolly way. So perhaps she has created a new sacred word.
This is true. Megan, anything else that's been making you smile in the brand zeitgeist this month?
Well, I think we covered, the poop, but I want to talk...
Done.
Yes. I do want to circle back and talk specifically about something on the On Brand podcast that made me smile, and that was a really great lesson to me. And it was Dori Clark, who I was very excited to listen to that episode because I was a huge Howard Dean fan.
Dori's teaching on the other side of the planet right
yes,
now. So,
yes,
hi, Dori.
She is, yes. But one of the things that made me smile from that, aside from all of the Howard Dean stuff, was how she talked about not being too precious with your content. And that made me smile because it is something that I really struggle with. I edit my tweets. I don't tweet very much because I'm very afraid of what my tweets sound like, and as somebody that, writes blog posts and updates for clients, I'm always very, very concerned about what my, and I'm coming at it from the standpoint of somebody that's a writer. And I'm very concerned, oh my gosh, does this sound good? And it keeps me actually from posting.
It's like a downside to the long form interview. There's so much good stuff. And I'm really thankful that you reminded me of that because that was really, really well said.
Yes.
Because I talk a lot about, my version of that is just push publish. And of course, the pushback I usually get is, well, you'd put something out there that's wrong and have something knowingly. And I'm like, no, you're just not getting the spirit of what I'm saying. And what she says, I think, says it better and does capture that spirit more, is this idea of being too precious. In that if you spend, I think Matt Collier used to say something like this, if you spend 10% more editing, is it going to make it 10% better?
Well, and you always point this out whenever I, because when I am writing my posts for the Iowa City Moms blog, how... I fiddle endlessly, and I am very particular, and I am very picky. I will just to push back a little bit. I think a tweet is one thing. Maybe not be so precious about a tweet, and I tend to do that. But what about blog posts? I do feel like there is a balance between just pushing publish and also kind of, you laugh at me when I use the word craft it, because I say I craft these blog posts.
That was my eye roll, in case you missed it.
I crafted a blog post, which does sound very, precious, I suppose.
Well, another thing, and here's, I'll toss my smile in there because it's actually a shout out to so much podcasting going on in the new year. And obviously that's a great thing. Speaking of On Point, I'll give a double shout out. There's a great episode that Tom Ashbrook had talking with Slate and some others about what may be the golden age of podcasting that we're sitting here talking into a microphone in. So I'm going to link up to that. But I specifically wanted to circle back with the being too precious on was over on Mike Stelzner, Social Media Examiner, his podcast, Social Media Marketing. Great top rated podcast. He had, he's got a big enough podcast on his own. He had two of the bigger voices in our space, Jay Baer with two podcasts, Social Pros, and then his video podcast, Jay Today, and Joe Polizzi of Content Inc. and PNR, This Old Marketing. But Jay kind of reinforced that as well. He's seen so much success with these little three-minute Jay Today videos that he makes. And he talked kind of about this idea, this echoing the same thing that Dory said about being too precious, of that crafting. And he's like, maybe if I just talk into an iPhone consistently and these videos aren't comprehensively edited. I mean, they're him like standing in the stairwell of his house at whatever ballroom he's in, speaking at some sort of event. And he's like, what if I just talk consistently for a few minutes? And they're not. And yeah, he's got a great post about how he gets, you know, I think 8 pieces of content out of each little 3-minute video. So it's the ripple effect, too, of not being too precious with what you're doing also. All right, Megan, where can folks find more about you online? On the Twitters at?
Megan K. You know, one of the things I'm not too precious about is when we live tweet Downton Abbey. That's one of the only times when my Twitter filter comes off.
But if you like some body jokes about the soapy sudsiness of Downton Abbey, tune in at 8 p.m. Central. Using the hashtag Downton Abbey, which is where I think where everybody is, but both Megan and I. We should say about your Twitter handle, mine, of course, at Nick Westergaard with those two pesky A's, but you are M-E-G-H-A-N-N-K.
Oh, yes.
K.
Right.
Being your middle name.
Right.
And where is your precious blog content found?
On the Iowa City Moms blog. And yeah.
Awesome. All right, well, a few final reminders for everyone. As we always give a shout-out, as I mentioned, our good friend Jay Baer, as a great resource that you should know more about. He's done it again. In addition to being a digital marketing thought leader, speaker, and best-selling author, he's now created a new online resource indexing all the great podcasts out there. It's called Marketing Podcasts, and you can find it at marketingpodcasts.com. If you like marketing and podcasts, you need to check this out. Show notes you can find where we're going to link up to everything we've talked about, whether they have been funny videos or hopefully not too many odd links to things involving castration and poop. You can find that at branddrivendigital.com. You can also subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, RSS, and more. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over to iTunes, tell us what you like most about the show, click that little star button, give us a rating, and then leave your thoughts. This is a new show, it's a growing show, we want to hear from you. So head to iTunes, give us a rating and review. And I'll also mention that you can email me directly. My email is simply my first name at mylastname.com. So that's Nick at Westergaard, WESTERGAARD.com. I'd love to know what you think, which guests you've liked, what features you like, ones you don't. I'd love to hear your feedback on what we're doing here on the On Brand podcast. And a final reminder that this show is brought to you by the Brand Driven Digital Event Series. You can learn more about Twitter brand basics coming up here in just a month. Digital Strategy Bootcamp, a 3-city tour throughout the Midwest, and the industry-leading Social Brand Forum right now by heading over to branddrivendigital.com. Until next week, I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.